Thanks, and thank you very much for inviting me here this evening. It's a great honour to follow both Sir Paul Nurse and Professor Phil Nelson on this. I think it's also very good to be at the start of 2016, frankly, rather than the start of 2015. I've been in my post now over a year, and I spent most of the first year saying we were waiting for things. We were waiting for the election. We were then waiting for Paul's report, and we were waiting for the spending review. And while certainly we haven't got all the details finalised yet, the boundaries of uncertainty have certainly narrowed in. I think I'd be interested in your thoughts and perspectives on the spending review. I think from our perspective in the Department for Biz, we felt we got a good spending review settlement for science and research. I think given the wider context for public finances, there's broad support within the Treasury. I think we're particularly pleased in our conversations with both Treasury ministers and our ministers, the support there is for science is incredibly strong. I wasn't having to make the fundamental case of the importance of science, both as a public good in and of itself, and the economic and the social impacts that Phil has talked about tonight. That is now broadly accepted. I think the evidence you've seen published by Treasury, amongst others at the time of the spending review and before, really reflects the support that's held at the highest levels, as I say, right the way across government, both politically and officially. The question, much more as a focus, was frankly pure affordability given the overall public finance position. So that's why I think I was glad, I think on the back of excellent work and collaboration, both with the research councils and across the scientific field, we were able to mount such a strong case and get such a strong settlement for science. We now have some certainty for the next 5 years, which gives us the backdrop for what for implementing some of the changes that were set out in Sir Paul Nurse's report. We, as I think ministers have said on a number of occasions, have welcomed the report. We very much see it as sitting in the legacy of the Dayton and the Waldegrave reviews. I think it's an excellent piece of work, and we've welcomed it pretty much in full. I thought what I'd do tonight, I won't sort of reiterate what Paul has already said, and he's given a much better summary of his report than I could possibly do, and similarly, Phil has set out some of the details of the current structure of research councils. I wanted instead just to stand back a moment and reflect on where the government is, where our ministers are in terms of some of the principles we're using as we start to design the new system for research as we take forward these recommendations, and then open up then with some questions about some of the detail that we'll need to work through. And I think I would certainly value your insight, challenge, and contributions on over the course of discussion this evening. So just standing back and emphasising some of the core principles, I think in a time of when there's so much change in the system, it's important to emphasise actually what's not changing, what we're keeping. Repeatedly, I say, in the last year, I've heard and seen how the UK has a world-class science system. No one is doubting that in Whitehall. No one is certainly doubting that amongst the ministerial colleagues. All these changes are about building on that world-class system. And that's why the first principle, the one around keeping excellence and the focus on excellence, is so important. And I think within that, you know, I touch on the importance of Haldane, and you can talk about the different definitions of it. We sort of see the Willetts definition as also a touchstone at the moment. But the Haldane combination of dual support, peer review, as our foundations of focus on excellence and making the most effective use of taxpayers' investments in scientific research. Certainly from my perspective, and I think certainly from others I've spoken to, the importance of those principles really, I think, is brought out in the figures that, Phil, you were setting out for the site, you know, the indications of what the productivity of our scientific research endeavour in this country, the sort of the citations per pound, whilst certainly not a perfect indicator, is a good indication of the quality and the impact of what we're able to achieve with, as you say, comparatively relatively little amounts of total investment in this country. I think the other part of that excellence as well is, you know, just bringing out the point on dual support. I know there's lots of concern around the support for dual support. I say, ministers keep on re-emphasising this, and again, almost back over to you, I am interested in ways in which we can lock this into the system. I've heard no debate internally or externally about moving away from dual support, and I think the more security and certainty we can give over that, the better. Certainly, when I'm speaking to researchers and at universities, the way in which the blue skies of discovery research is absolutely critical to our scientific endeavour is, I think, recognised right the way through the system. And I think certainly keeping that balance between the QR funding and the Research Council's more directed funding is incredibly important. So I think that's the sort of number one principle that I take from all the work we'll be doing over the next year as we work through the details of implementation, is making sure the touchstone is to build on the foundations of what's made the UK system world-class. I'm not undermining it. So that's the point one. The second point, and that's linked to that, is the importance of subject experts being responsible for allocation within their subject disciplines. Again, I think what I've been really taken by, and I think is echoed again in, Paul, your work, is the excellent work that's happened within the research councils, the way in which you're able to corral through various means, the ability and time of world-class subject researchers to spend time both in terms of peer review, in terms of the allocation projects, in terms of working out where to allocate the budget within your framework. I think keeping that focus on terms of the world-class subject leads responsible for the scientific allocations, again, is something we want to keep. So what do we want to change if they're the two sort of principles in terms of what we want to maintain on the basis of the current system? I think the thing that surprised me over the last 12 months, and certainly when I look at the minutes of council meetings, is the amount of time that eminent scientists are spending on, frankly, non-scientific issues. I think the amount of time that's been spent worrying about the grant processes, around some of the assurance processes back to BIS, some of the natural governance systems you need to have in place as part of a publicly accountable body are very onerous. There's obviously work we can do to try and work through the most lean and effective ways of managing that. But it feels to me to be crazy to be able to pull together these world-class leading scientists and have themselves spending time about worrying about buildings and IT systems and shared services. I'm sure that's not what they want to spend their time on. It's not an effective use of their time. I think that's something we want to be able to change. The next point is around this idea of the strategic brain in the system. I say I'm new into this world. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a researcher. I'll leave you to judge whether my qualifications in economics counts as science or not. I shall leave that one floating for later. But my whole point is I'm about the connection between Whitehall and the scientific community. One of the things I found hardest to do in the last year is really to be able to advise ministers on the relative strengths and weaknesses of the UK scientific endeavour in different fields and disciplines compared to others. There's an incredible amount of data, and we touched on this earlier on, in the REF, and in terms of where the research councils make their grants. Pulling that together to have a consistent, coherent field of both just publicly available research, let alone some of the charitably funded research, and of course, the vast majority of R&D spend that goes on in businesses, is incredibly hard. Certainly, with sort of the patchwork vision I think we have, and I don't feel able to advise ministers fully on exactly what those comparative strengths and weaknesses are. And I think whilst the research councils are individually excellent, I think there's more we need to do to help them become more than the sum of the parts. And I think RCUK is the start of that. With Research UK, I feel, being able to sort of take that on further. In addition, there's this issue of multidisciplinary work. I think, Phil, you're quite right that multidisciplinary work can't be at the expense of sector expertise and focused discipline in the basic research. But we do know this is a gap and an issue. And I think the question for me is, how can we overcome the natural centrifugal forces that the individual research councils have to come together as a collective whole and work out how we tackle the collective societal challenges that we know cut across the disciplines? If we think about the issues of obesity, about terror, about climate change, they touch on the physical science, behavioural sciences, economics, history plays into that. We need to blend in the different experts to be able to really tackle these issues and connect them back into Whitehall and ministers. I think the question for me is how you can then ensure there is both the depth of research that we can draw on, but the ability then to corral that and focus that on these big, important scientific and societal challenges, which is, frankly, at the heart of why taxpayers are funding public science. And the final point, and this is probably the economist to me, there is a value for money question for taxpayers. You know the broader fiscal position. You know the challenges we face right the way across public spending and some of the scale of the cuts on public spending we've seen over the last 5 years and will continue to see over the next 10. I know there's lots of mood music around, so is this end of austerity or not? I keep on reminding my colleagues internally in BIS, we are only halfway through some of the cuts programme, the austerity programme that was started in 2010 at the beginning of the coalition administration. I mean, in that context, we have done relatively well. Obviously, we'd always like to have more money for science and scientific research, but it is beholden on us to ensure the best value for money from that research. I mean, so part of that is around things like citations per pound. Yes, there's a broad recognition of the public good of fundamental research in this country, but also it's thinking through about how we can connect that then to the economic challenge of increased productivity and some of the big societal challenges we we face. I've touched on some of the global challenges, but even within this country, things like flood defence and resistance, and how we can connect that back. And then within that, again, there's these questions around how the Research Council should operate relative to universities and make the ease of applying for grants and doctoral training as simple as possible. So where are we? And I think to sort of try and bring that together, there's some of the principles you've heard where sort of Paul has set out in terms of his report. And so I thought it was helpful just to reflect back on where ministers are now as we start to move into the open debate. I think the first point, just to emphasise, we do want to move forward with this concept of Research UK. We do see the benefits of having a single strong voice for science, both in the country up to ministers and Whitehall, but also within making the case to taxpayers and the wider community, and actually internationally. There's obviously the importance of the individual sector areas and sector voices, but within that, actually, the strong single voice that can cut through the seven different voices of the important different communities, I think will be incredibly powerful. I think that will help in terms of making the case back into Whitehall, frankly, giving some of the difficult messages back to ministers that I think are incredibly important, and making the case for continued investment in science. I mean, there are a number of considerations we need to work through, not least the implications around HEFCE. Obviously, there's the Higher Education Green Paper that was published earlier this year. We've raised obvious, very important structural questions about what this might mean for the QR, the other half of dual support. I think there are, you know, there's a strong case around bringing together a single view of research funding in this country. You can see, as I say, the importance of having a single understanding of the research landscape and where the research priorities should be, and advising ministers on that basis. But within that, I do recognise there's importance how we can give assurance about the division between QR funding and Research Council grant funding, what that means in terms of the insight and understanding of the institutions and research institutions is also particularly important, but we want to understand our way through that. Secondly, the Chancellor said at the time of the spending review he wanted to integrate Innovate UK into this new research body. I think this very much is building on Anne Dowling's work in terms of some of the business university collaboration and some of the importance of how we can ensure that the investment we've made in scientific research can then be translated into both the ideas and the innovation and the businesses that can provide the productivity and the growth that will continue to fund the scientific endeavour over years to come. However, that's only part of Innovate UK's work, and I think, Phil, you touched on the importance of making sure we don't lose Innovate UK's wider perspective in terms of encouraging collaboration between businesses. We're in the middle of a consultation, I'm sure, and I think I do know that most of you already have fed in. I think what I'd love to use tonight for, really, is to hear your views around how we can make this process work. We're looking to come forward with our response to the consultation later this year. We haven't set a date for this yet. My plan is certainly to come forward later this year, setting out the next steps and taking the level of detail down following the consultation, having worked with the research councils, and having hopefully worked bilaterally with a lot of you in this room, to really work through some of the details and how we can take this forward to the implementation, including legislation and operational changes, and frankly, mitigating some of the risks. I think, Phil, you very articulately set out. I mean, the issues on my mind are how we balance some of these common needs and the needs for standardisation across the research endeavour for applications with the special needs of individual disciplines. It's how we ensure we can continue to manage the incredibly successful institutes. Things like the LMB is the obvious shining example here within this new framework. I think it's important to think about how we can protect dual funding and provide the assurances to the community, whilst also giving some of the certainty we know that's critical, because we know that certainty is absolutely important to underpinning the long-term scientific research endeavour. And I think thinking through in terms of some of the broader governance changes, I very much support, Paul, what you were saying about the importance of the strong voice of science in Whitehall. I think in some ways it's a strength rather than a weakness that the interest in science is dispersed across Whitehall. I think we don't want to ghettoise it in one department. I think that would be a weakness. Obviously, you want a single strong voice for funding for core research through QR and the research councils. But the fact that we now have strong chief scientists in all Whitehall departments, I think, is an incredibly powerful step forward. So I can see John from DEC in front of me. And the way in which we're now trying to plug those chief scientific advisors into the research council network to ensure there's a strong open dialogue between the research communities and the scientific communities in Whitehall is key. The other aspect I think we need to do more work on, actually, is connecting the scientific endeavour into the policy-making community in Whitehall. This happens in some areas, but not strong enough, frankly, in my view. I mean, there's more we need to do working with some of the policy community in Whitehall to think through how we can access the excellent world-class research we know is already there, and that ongoing discussion and debate rather than the one-off research grants that you sometimes see. So, look, there are lots of questions. There's lots of details we'll need to work through. We are very much in the listening phase in Whitehall, but I think there's some core principles we've started to lock in, and I think hopefully building on the foundations that have made the UK a world leader in scientific research with some guiding principles for reform, but a real recognition about the importance of balancing the risks and the opportunities appropriately as we work through this over the coming year. So thank you very much.